I would appreciate your prayers. I need them. I feel like the Lord has been talking to me this week about some things that this message is. He's been talking to me about some of this stuff for a long time now in my own personal life. And I feel like that he expanded on it this week and gave me some thoughts to share with you this morning. So I trust that it'll be a challenge and a benefit to us all. Probably the most familiar scripture about patience we have in the Bible is James chapter 1 and verse 2. Then it says, "My brethren, count it all joy when ye fall into diverse temptations, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. But let patience have her perfect work, that ye may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing." I looked up the word patience in this context. The word patience here, looked up the Greek on it, and it means steadfastness, constancy, endurance. And the description given says in the New Testament, the characteristic of a man who has not swerved from his deliberate purpose and his loyalty to faith and piety by even the greatest trials and sufferings. And so we hear a little bit more about patience. This is a verse we've already read in the Sunday school this morning, or quoted. In the fifth chapter of James, it says, "Behold, we count them happy which endure. Ye have heard of the patience of Job, and have seen the end of the Lord, that the Lord is very pitiful and of tender mercy." And I think of another scripture before we go any farther. That's in Hebrews 10 and 36, and we won't turn there, but it says, "For ye have need of patience, that after ye have done the will of God, ye might receive the promise." And so I think from those scriptures and more, we can gather that patience is something the Lord wants us to have in our lives. He wants us to be able to face situations without getting all out of sorts and impatient about it. He wants us to be able to deal with people that are maybe less than easy to deal with without getting all bent out of shape and flustered and frustrated and grinding our teeth, just waiting for the person to walk out the door or the situation to end. But he wants us to be able to approach those situations with a calmness that is more than just, "I'm gritting my teeth and I hope no bad words come out." It's something that starts from the inside of us. It's something that the Lord himself has to put there. I know I don't have it in myself. I know there are many situations. And you know what? Temptations come. Temptations to be impatient or frustrated with the situation come. And I have them. And I know you probably do too. But the Lord wants to teach us as we go along. This is one of these things that I think you can get more and more of as you get older and more experienced. It's not something you're going to get the fullness of when you get saved. There are some things that when we get saved, I believe the Lord will and can and will deliver us from instantly. I believe that the Lord has lasting victory for the alcoholic, for those caught up in those kind of things. But the idea of patience is something that I think that as we go along, we have to learn. And we get more and more patient if we stay in God's will. And he's going to teach us. But it's something that he wants us to have within ourselves. It's something that we have to be able to work for him. And there are things that I think that the reason that God doesn't give them to us now is because we don't have as much patience as we need to have to deal with that situation. Now, I've written on the board, patience and pride. And when the Lord first started talking to me about the thought of patience, it was kind of funny because he started talking to me about pride at the same time. And I started writing down some of these things, and I wrote down some thoughts about patience, and I wrote down some thoughts about pride too. And I didn't really realize how connected they were until I really started to get in. And I even said, well, why, Lord, why? Okay, what do I need to do with this? Do I need to separate this one message here? And then this is another message here. And then last night, this is one of the last, probably about the last scripture the Lord gave me. And it just put everything together. And it's in... Let me find it. Well, I lost it. Hold on. Ah, Ecclesiastes 7 and 8. Better is the end of a thing than the beginning thereof. And the patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. And so you can see they're set over against each other as opposites. Another translation says, patience of spirit is better than haughtiness of spirit. And then the next verse, give me a few minutes. I want to come back to this, all right? We're going to come back to this scripture, Lord willing. So now I'd like to start building these two thoughts about patience and pride, and I want them to come together. So, Lord, help us to be able to do that. Proverbs 13 and 10 says, only by pride cometh contention. Isn't that an interesting verse? Only by pride cometh contention. Well, why does it say that? You know, I think that if you think about it, and I don't have any real deep thoughts on this, but when two people are not agreed about something and there's some contention going on, I believe that humility can fix that. It's something that maybe there's an insult. You know, he insulted my dignity here. Said something about me that I don't want him to feel that. I want people to know. I want people to know that I'm good at this. I want people to know that I'm right. And so I'm going to be contentious, and I'm going to say my piece. I'm going to make sure that the truth about me is known. And so I'm going to not keep silent. I'm going to make sure that everybody knows that I've been wronged, that I've been hurt. I want to make sure that everybody knows that I have a better grasp of this situation than this person over here. And you know, that fuels a lot of discussions in the world, in marriages, in families, between in-laws, all kinds of situations where there's differences, all right? People are not all made the same. People don't all think the same. In fact, you'd be hard-pressed to find two people anywhere that think exactly the same. And they have differences, and when they come together, people want to be right. And they want to be thought of as right. You know what that is? That's pride. That's the root of it all. Only by pride cometh contention. And now, well, all right. The scripture said the patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Let me give you an analogy to help you understand what I'm trying to bring out here. When think about how transportation has changed in the last 200 years. My brother just took a trip to India. And I tracked his flight on my phone. I was watching it, and I could see he's over. I thought, "Oh, look, he's gonna either clip China or go real close to it." It's interesting to me. See all the countries he flew over, and going to fly over Greenland. Well, I'd like to fly over Greenland. And in 14-hour flight, he crossed 10 time zones and went the same distance that it would have taken several months 200 years ago to do. Weeks or months. It would have taken a long time. I don't know. See, I guess the steam-powered wasn't really introduced until it was in the earlier 1800s, I think, 18 something or other. You children probably know better than I do. But boats began to get faster, and so then it cut things down after steam and engine, and then later diesel engines and all that came into play. Boats began to get faster, but still, in the earlier 1900s, the fastest way to get from continent to continent was still by ship. And a lot of people did that. That's how they traveled. And it would still take them days or weeks to get them somewhere like that. Travel across land has also improved. Reading a children's book, one of the Laura Ingalls Wilder books, to the children every evening, nearly, and talked about how they would go to, how they sent somebody off to the academy 5 whole miles away. Well, I traveled 14 miles to get here to church this morning in 20 minutes. And so it's changed. Everything's changed. Now, if I get behind that train over there, and I'm on my way somewhere, you know what the temptation is? To say, this is holding me up. I shouldn't have to wait for this. And I don't even think about the fact that 150 years ago, I wouldn't even be to the stop sign on Scrubgrass Road where I live. I'd be a whole lot farther back. I'm already a lot farther, and I got to wait 5 minutes for a train, so it might take me 25 minutes to get to church instead of 18 or 20. What we think about things like that is relative, because it isn't compared to any absolute, but it's compared to what we expect today, our expectations today. I was reading in the same book that I just referenced, we were reading about the cobbler came and made shoes, and he made boots. He made a pair of boots for the son there, and it took him 3 days to do it. Well, I doubt it takes him 3 days to make my boots at the factory, but I go down to the store and I buy them, and it doesn't, at the very least, it doesn't cost me anywhere near 3 days worth of money, 3 working days worth of money. Everything like that is relative. So what used to take a long time to get somewhere, we can do it just in a few minutes now. All right? So, if you think about that, that makes a really good analogy for patience. If I started out from my house to come here, and I knew in my mind that it was going to take me all day to get here to church, you know what I would have done if I knew what time I would have had to be here? I would have, and that's how long it takes everybody, okay? Everybody, it take, got to break some trail. That's what they did back in the old times. It would take maybe all day to go 10 or 20 miles. And they would plan on that, and they wouldn't sit and chafe the whole time that they did it, because they expected it to take that long. But now, they might have got impatient if their wagon broke down, and now instead of 1 day, it's going to take 3 days because we've got to go get a part for the wagon and come back and all that. And so maybe that would have been their way of getting impatient with it. But now, we go somewhere that's supposed to take 20 minutes that used to take all day, and we get impatient if we have to wait 5 minutes. Well, I'm sorry I'm late because I got caught in traffic or whatever. I think that a lot of times the reason we get impatient about things is that our expectation about how it ought to be is where it ought not to be. All right? Let me give you an example. Let's read about Naaman. I think that when we are impatient with other people, it shows that we think too much of our own importance or time. And when we're impatient with circumstances, it shows that, this is something I kind of wrote these things down, we think that God allowed something we shouldn't have to deal with. Those are the perceptions that we get. And there are things we don't consider. Naaman, the Lord wanted to teach Naaman a lesson. I really don't know what Naaman's heart was like, but that's the beauty of all of these Bible stories, is that God knew the person's heart from the beginning, and he sent the things that were just right for them, and we can't see the heart, and so there's things that we have to kind of infer sometimes from the stories. So in 2 Kings 5, starting about the 10th verse, we know the story. Naaman had leprosy. He had a little servant girl that was a captive Israelite, and she said, "There's a man of God over in my country that can cure you of your leprosy." And so he went to Israel. Kind of an interesting story. Wrote to the king about it. I think maybe he got it mixed up and said, "I'd like you to cure me of my leprosy." And maybe he thought that the king was the most important person in Israel, and that was the one that was the most qualified. The king said, "Don't you see this guy's trying to cause trouble? Anyway, we know the story." And so Naaman, he had a perception. He had a perception about how God ought to do it. He had a perception about who he was. He had a perception that was flawed. And so, listen to what Elisha did. So they sent him to the house of Elisha. And I'm guessing that he thought that Elisha would come out maybe bow to him and do this homage and treat him like royalty, because he was a noble. He was a great general. But Elisha didn't even come out of his house. Elisha sent a messenger unto him saying, "Go and wash in Jordan 7 times, and thy flesh shall come again to thee, and thou shalt be clean." But Naaman was wroth. Maybe another way to put this, he was highly offended. And went away and said, "Behold, I thought he will surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God and strike his hand over the place and recover the leper." You know, that's what's befitting of somebody of my position where I'm at. This is what should have happened. Are not Abana and Pharpar, rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? May I not wash in them and be clean? So he turned and went away in a rage. Not only did he didn't even come out of his house. He didn't bring some sort of entourage and bring gifts, and he didn't acknowledge who I am. He didn't make any kind of a public ceremony. He didn't even heal me, but he told me to go wash in a muddy river. And one time wasn't enough. He told me to do it 7 times. You know, maybe if he had, you know, I wonder if Elisha would have told him to wash in the Jordan 1 time. He might have been a little disgruntled, but you know, he might have thought, you know, maybe I can get away with this and nobody will see and go jump in and get right back out. But he said, "I want you to do this 7 times. And he was probably just mumbling to himself the whole time, "Is it not bad enough that he told me to do this, but I have to do it again and again and again?" And every time I'm reminded of what Elisha the prophet thinks of me. He sent me to this muddy river. Doesn't he know who I am? Not going to do it. And so he went away in a rage. But here's the problem. He's still got leprosy. And there's no way to get it off of him. And his servants came near and spake unto him and said, My father, if the prophet had bid thee do some great thing, wouldest thou not have done it? How much rather when he saith to thee, Wash and be clean. So he went down. Then went he down and dipped himself 7 times in Jordan. You know, God knows how to bring us down to where we need to be. See, where we need to be is where God knows we need to be. And at a lot of times, it's a whole lot lower than we think we need to be. He went down, and I can just imagine, he weighed it in the balance. He said, well, what, you know, I don't want to be thought of as a fool. I don't want to lose my dignity, but I want to be clean. And you know, that's the same opportunity that God gives to every one of us. He says, wash and be clean. Sometimes we're going to have lose a lot of things that we thought we wanted to keep. And that's what Naaman, he wanted to hold on to some things. And he went down and he dipped himself 7 times in Jordan. Maybe every time he dipped, he got a little lower. I don't know. In his spirit, according to the saying of the man of God. And his flesh came again like unto the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. And I find it very interesting what Jesus had to say about this man. Because in Luke 4:27, he told the people, he said, there were many lepers. There were many lepers in Israel in the time of Elisha the prophet. And he said, none of them was cleansed except Naaman the Syrian. Did God favor Naaman over all the lepers that were in Israel? Were there other lepers? Yeah, Jesus said there were. Right then, there were other lepers there. You know, we have places that we come up against in our lives. And the Lord wants to give us something. And He will give us something if we come to Him in the right way. You know, I believe that Jesus was saying this to make a point. Jesus was teaching in the synagogues, and there were people that were too proud to accept that He was what He was teaching them. They wouldn't humble themselves. They didn't have any inclination. They would have to divest themselves of something that they were trying to hold on to in order to accept the sayings of Jesus. You know, those people in Israel, their idea of a Messiah was one that would not require them to humble themselves one bit. They were proud and they were haughty. They thought they knew the teachings of the Bible. They thought that they knew all the prophecies. They thought they were the closest people to God that there were. And Jesus came and He said, wash and be clean. And many of them wouldn't do it. And he gave them this for an example. He said there were many lepers. Naaman was made clean because he humbled himself and he took upon him what he had to do. He did it. He divested himself of everything. It's because the reward, the expectation meant enough to him. Maybe he looked back and he saw in his mind's eye, his wife and his children back at the house. And he said, I can't go there. I can't be with them. I can't raise my children. I've got to live this separate life. And thank God, Naaman almost wasn't healed. Because he didn't want to humble himself. He didn't want to give up the perceptions or the image. He didn't want to go dip himself in that muddy river. And it wasn't just a muddy river in Syria. It was a muddy river in Israel. Syria had been a terror to Israel. His little servant girl was somebody that came from Israel. They had made some victories, conquered. And Elisha said, I want you to go, and I want you to go out there in the Jordan River, right here in Israel, where the Israelites can see the great general dipping down in the muddy water 7 times. And that's what the Lord told Elisha to tell him. You know, sometimes I think, I hear people say things, and I hear people in confrontations and in arguments, and I hear people talking about other people. And you know what? I've done it myself too, okay? I'm not going to exclude myself from the things I've heard. And I've said things before, and after I've said them, the thought has come to me, who do you think you are? And I've heard other people saying things, and I've thought, who do you think you are? What kind of perception must you have about yourself to think that you can say this? To think that you can maybe pass judgment on this situation or talk about this person over here? You know, it's easier to look at other people because we can see the problems in their lives, but you know the Lord wants to work on some problems in our lives as well. I'm thinking of another... Okay, let's go back to Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes 7 and 8. Better is the end of a thing than the beginning thereof, and the patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Then it says, be not hasty in thy spirit to be angry, for anger resteth in the bosom of fools. And I'm going to be vulnerable with you this morning and tell you that one of my natural weaknesses is to be soon angry. But you know, the Lord began talking to me about this a while back and started to show me what was behind it. How do you look at somebody and tell them, don't be soon angry, because anger rests in the bosom of fools? Anger is an emotion. And it kind of, how can you control what it does? You know that if you're in the place, it says, it just got done saying, the patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. You know, if I start from home and I'm delayed 5 minutes, you know, if I expected that it was going to take me 20 minutes to get here, but it took me 25, well, no wonder I got impatient. Maybe if I thought, you know, it used to take people all day, I would have a different outlook about it from the start. And I would say, you know, I got delayed a little bit, but thank God, transportation sure is better than it used to be. I got here in 25 minutes. You know, when a person, how can you look at somebody and say, don't be soon angry? Because when a person is angry with a situation and they flare up real quick, you know what that means? That means that they already have their own self in a place where they feel like they have a right to be angry at that. Their perception of themselves is, I'm on top of this. I'm where I need to be here. They're out of line. You know, if you're doing something wrong and somebody else is doing something wrong and you're doing it together, it's kind of hard to get angry at them, right? But if you're in a situation and somebody says something to you that's insulting to you and you flare up, you know, maybe you haven't considered, maybe you said something to them yesterday that was exactly the same caliber, and they have as much right to get angry at you as you do at them for what they're saying just now. David can really teach us a lot here. 2 Samuel 16 and 5. This is when David was fleeing from Absalom. And they were all fleeing up the mountain. This whole company of people, it says, when King David came to Bahurim, Behold, thence came out a man of the family of the house of Saul, whose name was Shimei, the son of Gera. He came forth and cursed still as he came. Now, I want you to keep in mind who this was that he was cursing. It wasn't some policeman. It wasn't even the mayor. It was the king. It was the king he was cursing. This is something just unheard of. He would have never done this if King David would have been on his throne. But King David is in a very weak position. And this guy probably, well, he said, this is the hand of the Lord. And so he felt confident in doing what he was doing. He felt confident that he wasn't going to get in trouble. So he was doing it. And he cast stones at David. And all the servants of King David and all the people and all the mighty men were on his right hand and on his left. And thus said Shimei when he cursed, come out, thou bloody man and thou man of Belial. The Lord hath returned upon thee all the blood of the house of Saul, in whose stead thou hast reigned. So he's saying, I mean, this is the height of insult. David knew the real story. David knew that he had been anointed by the prophet Samuel twice. He knew that he had been handpicked to be the next king because King Saul rejected the Lord. He probably knew that Samuel had said, because you've rejected the Lord, said to Saul, then the Lord has rejected you from being king. He knew that. And this guy is cursing him. And he's throwing stones. And farther down it said that he was throwing dust on him. Just all of the highest insults that he could throw. The Lord hath returned upon thee all the blood of the house of Saul. That's another insult. In whose stead that thou hast reigned. You've been reigning all this time. And it's because you're a bloody man. It's because you've cheated. And when he said those things, maybe David in his mind thought about the time that he was standing at Saul's head and Abishai's got a spear in his hand. Abishai said, let me take this dead dog's head off. And David said, no, far be it from me to touch the Lord's anointed. And all this was likely going through David's mind. And then Abishai, he said, the Lord hath returned unto thee all the blood of the house of Saul. Shimei said this, in whose stead thou hast reigned. You had no right to reign in the first place. And the Lord hath delivered the kingdom into the hand of Absalom thy son. And behold, thou art taken in thy mischief because thou art a bloody man. Then said Abishai the son of Zeruiah unto the king, why should this dead dog curse the Lord, my lord the king? Let me go over, I pray thee, and take off his head. And the king said, what have I to do with you, ye sons of Zeruiah? However you pronounce that. So let him curse, because the Lord hath said unto him, curse David. Who shall then say, wherefore hast thou done so? So now I've done some research on these verses. And what this means is, he acknowledged that the Lord allowed it. And when it says, because the Lord has said, curse David, the word there, the proper word, according to my understanding, is if. If the Lord told him to curse me, I don't know. I don't know if the Lord told him, but if the Lord told him, I know he allowed it. If the Lord moved him to curse me, who am I to stop him? And these guys were, just listen to the rest of this here. And David said to Abishai and to all his servants, behold, my son which came forth out of my bowels seeketh my life. How much more now may this Benjamite do it? Let him alone and let him curse, for the Lord hath bidden him. It may be that the Lord will look on mine affliction and that the Lord will requite me good for his cursing this day. And as David and his men went by the way, Shimei went along on the hillside over against him and cursed as he went. and threw stones at him and cast dust. And the king and all the people that were with him came weary and refreshed themselves there. So they're coming up this mountain. They're tired. They're worn out. Just weary from the trip. And here's this guy coming. What happens when you get tired? You know, I have the greatest temptations that I have to be impatient is when I'm tired or stressed. Am I the only one? When I'm tired and stressed and maybe, I tell you what, it used to happen to me. And it doesn't really happen anymore, and I believe it's because the Lord helped me to get victory here. But used to, it would just come without fail. I'd have my hands over my head trying to hang a piece of crown or something. Maybe I got nails in my, screws in my mouth and a screw gun and everything. And here's the phone ringing. And it would make me so frustrated. And I think every time, why does this have to happen every time? Maybe it would be, and maybe I would look at it. Maybe I would see that it was somebody I needed to talk to, or somebody that I'd think, oh, they probably need some help. And there were times that I let it go, but a lot of times I laid down all my stuff and then I answered the phone. Maybe I had to go back afterwards and wipe glue off a joint and re-glue it, because it had already started setting up. This happened time after time. And you know what? The Lord helped me to realize that I had too high of an opinion of myself. Better is the patient in spirit than the proud in spirit. Don't you know David could have so easily said, I'm the king. I deserve more respect than this. I deserve more... I deserve something. And this guy's coming and throwing rocks, and there's false accusations flying, and this is totally out of line. This guy's totally out of line. There's no way he should be allowed to do this. Yes, absolutely go and take off his head. But instead, he said, the Lord's allowed it. Nothing about I'm the king. Nothing about this is how great I am. Nothing about, don't, listen, maybe at the very least you think he could have been justified in bringing Shimei and saying, and laid him out and saying, said, listen, I'm not going to kill you because I fear God, and I also love all my subjects, but mark this, I'm going to be back on my throne one day and you're going to see how wrong you were. And you were wrong about this, and don't you know what I did when Saul was in the cave and I didn't kill him and the Lord, and just lined him out. But he didn't do any of that. And they were tired and they were going up the hill, and he said, just let him do it. Let him keep doing it, because the Lord has a benefit in it for me. And I want every bit of that I could get. And that's what, you know, I believe that if we would take that into our hearts and we would let it sink down, when situations happen, when somebody insults us, instead of rising up inside and saying, who does he think he is? Why would he say that to me? Don't they know who I am? Don't they know what I've done? Instead, we'll say, you know, I wonder if there's some good in this for me. Surely there is, or the Lord wouldn't have allowed it. You know, David wasn't the only one that did that. 1 Peter 2:20. For what glory is it if when ye be buffeted for your faults ye shall take it patiently? But if when ye do well and suffer for it ye take it patiently, this is acceptable with God. For even hereunto were ye called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that ye should follow his steps, who did no sin, neither was guile found in his mouth, who, when he was reviled, reviled not again. Was there ever anyone that could have shut them all up and confounded their words and brought everything they did to naught? Who was there ever anybody that could have done it better than Jesus? No! When he suffered, he said, here you're called. You're called to follow his steps. When he suffered, he threatened not, but committed himself to him that judgeth righteously. And you know, that's exactly what you and I are called to do. Whenever we're insulted or maligned, and we're worried about our reputation, and we're worried about, you know, there is such a thing about keeping ourselves, our reputation, for the sake of the gospel of Christ. But if that's really what needs to happen, the Lord will help us to do it in a way that doesn't cross his will, that doesn't get carnal, that doesn't put ourselves out. And a lot of times the Lord will do it for us, and we don't have to do anything. It didn't say that God didn't care about it. It didn't say that God wasn't going to make the situation right. All it said was that Jesus didn't revile, not because it didn't matter, but because he was willing to commit himself to him that judgeth righteously. And that is what you and I are called to do. In every situation, in every confrontation, we are called to take those things patiently and to suffer for it, because there's a God in heaven that looks upon it, and he will write the things that need to be righted. We don't have to worry about it. May the Lord help us. Jesus was the King of Kings. And I want to close with a few more thoughts about pride this morning. I was at Monarch, big open air tabernacle there. And every year, I think, or several years, I've seen this happen. Little bird, hummingbird, flying around in the tabernacle. And he was flying around and around. And I remember thinking, he's trying to get out of there. He was trying to get out. And I thought, I wonder how much energy he's got left to beat those wings like that. How long is he going to keep flying? And he would fly around for hours and hours. See, in the tabernacle, for those that haven't been there, we've got this big tabernacle, and then there's a higher part that goes straight up, and a roof. And there's windows in the top to let air out, but they're screened, I believe. Anyway, the bird wasn't getting out. And he was flying around and around. And you know why he couldn't get out? Because he wouldn't get down low enough to get out. And I thought, you poor bird, if you would just get down low, if you would fly down to where you could see the way out, you could get out. But it would fly around and around and around, trying everything it could. And I saw when it started to really get tired, it would fly for just a few seconds, and then it would land and perch. And then when its strength was maybe a little bit recovered, it would fly around again for a few seconds. And you know what? Finally, I saw that bird laying on the floor. And I've seen that happen several times with hummingbirds in that tabernacle. Maybe we need to do something to keep that from happening. But, you know, I think it's a really good comparison, a really good analogy to how people do things. People have problems, and problems in their relationships, and problems with circumstances. And I believe that the answer many times, if not every time, is, are you getting down low enough? Low enough in the situation? Or are you doing everything you can? You know, as long as I can still preserve my dignity, as long as I can preserve my image, as long as people still feel the same way about me, I'm willing to do whatever it takes to get out of this situation, as long as I can keep those things. You know, it's not always God's will that we keep those things. He has a way of bringing us very low. My Uncle Philip told me one time, he said, you need to treat prideful thoughts exactly the same way that you treat sensual, lustful thoughts. When they come, and we know this. We know what you're supposed to do with those kind of lustful thoughts, bad thoughts. You push them out of your mind. The temptation will come. What do you do with it? By the grace of God, I'm not going to dwell on that. You know that I believe that many times we don't feel the same way about proud thoughts. But we allow them to kind of flourish and grow. And it creates perceptions about ourselves that are not accurate. And then it creates contentions. And it creates impatience. I shouldn't have to deal with that, and so I'm impatient about it. Because that's not the way it should be. This is not the way I should be treated. This is not the circumstance that should have happened to me. And so we're chafing and struggling. Now, you know, James, we'll go back to James, and we started off in James 1 and 2. It said, let patience have a perfect work. Now, it says in verse 5, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, that giveth to all men liberally, and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him. So if you just read that verse, and you think, well, that's good. God will give everybody wisdom that asks for it. But then it goes on and gives a qualifier and says, let him ask in faith, nothing wavering. And then it says that somebody that wavers in their faith and has doubts about what God's willing to do, let not that man think that he shall receive anything from the Lord. You know that God is willing to give us everything we need. It says that he gives to all men liberally. But there are qualifiers that come with that statement. He gives to all men liberally. But there's another one. There are scriptures that say, like this one, 1 Peter 5 and 5. Yea, all of you, be subject one to another, and be clothed with humility. For God resisteth the proud and giveth grace to the humble. He resists the proud. So if he's resisting you, how much do you think he's going to let you know his will? How much wisdom do you think he's going to give you? How much grace? How much discernment? How many of those things? I believe that sometimes he gives us things in mercy, notwithstanding the problems that we still have that we are not dealing with. But, you know, I believe he says, just like Elisha's or Naaman's servant says, wash and be clean. Divest yourself of those things. I want to tell you something. I made a promise to the Lord just last year. And I wrote it down on my phone and I dated it. And that promise was, Lord, if you deal with me, if you deal with me and I become aware that I did something from a proud motive, if there was any of that in there, I'm going to humble down right away. And I'm going to repent of that and I'm going to do whatever I have to do for that not to occur again. And the Lord will help us out. And you know, there's been times since then, plenty of times that I've had to say, Lord, I shouldn't have said that, and I'm sorry. Lord, I shouldn't have done. Help me not to do that. You know, the Lord, it says that he resists the proud, but he giveth grace to the humble. Do you want more grace? Do you want more of those things in your life? I believe there are some keys that the Lord wants us to learn, and this is one of them. It says that in Jesus Christ are hid all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. And I'm thinking with that verse, I think of a song that says, Lord, I am fondly, earnestly longing into thy holy likeness to grow, thirsting for more and deeper communion, yearning thy love more fully to know. Open the wells of grace and salvation. Pour the rich streams deep into my heart. Cleanse and refine my thought and affection. Seal me and make me pure as thou art. And through your life, you would do well. We would all do well to keep this verse. God resisteth the proud, but he giveth grace to the humble. You pray for me. I want to do this too.